Governor Branstad has laid out his plan for paying and promoting Iowa's teachers. Last week, we heard the governor's administration's pitch for the plan. This week, we turn to those impacted educators. River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. What's good about the plan? Are there topics missing from the strategy? We'll talk with legislator Todd Bowman, a Democratic senator from Maquoketa who teaches high school, and Quentin Stanerson, a Republican representative from Centerpoint and a middle school teacher. We'll also hear from Mary Jane Cobb, director of the Iowa State Education Association, and Denny Wolf, the superintendent of Norwalk Community Schools. Join our conversation after this news. Live from the Law Library at the Iowa State House, this is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Reforming Iowa's education system. It's a hefty task, and there have been attempts in the past. Subcommittees have started the ball rolling now, and legislators are looking into the bill and coming up with their own ideas that the governor has put forward. Here in the Law Library today, I have Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa that teaches high school government and psychology, right?
Correct.
Thanks for being here, Senator.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Clay.
And then we also have Quentin Stanerson, a Republican from Centerpoint on the House side. He's also a middle school teacher. Representative, thanks for being here.
You bet. And I teach high school as well, government and economics.
So we both have some government interest here around the table. Also joining me here in the Law Library is the Executive Director of the Iowa State Education Association, Mary Jane Cobb. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And also crowded around the table here in the Law Library is Denny Wolf, the superintendent at Norwalk Community Schools. Thanks for being here.
You bet. Thanks for inviting us.
And so, Denny, we'll start with you. You were on one of these education task forces that the governor put forward. I'm curious for you to talk just a little bit about how you guys met and what were some of the takeaways from that meeting to set the conversation going.
Well, we had an outstanding group. It was a diverse group. There were board members, ISEA was there, school administrators of Iowa there, superintendents, teachers, parents, a wide group of constituents were there. We had some opportunities to have successful programs from other states that we could potentially use as role models and to learn about, presented to us to widen our information base before we started. And we had a lot of discussions. I'd say good, strong discussions between folks. There were a lot of strong opinions at the table. And I think that's a good thing for Iowa, that a lot of that information is vetted out before we started. And we also know it's a long way to go before the bill is finished. So we had good processing, my opinion. I thought we did well. Everyone had a chance for a voice at the table. And by the time we were done, it had there was consensus. Even though there were a large group of people there, there was general consensus on the main points, that we need qualified people in the classrooms.
And that general consensus, do you think that came through in what the governor's put forward on the table?
I think the major points came through. I think as with any legislation, there are things that have to be worked out yet and different views of what was said sometimes around the table. But I'd say that overall, I feel the guts of it. The guts of the conversation are in the proposal.
Mary Jane Cobb, your organization, the Iowa State Education Association, hasn't endorsed the bill. Do you feel like there are some glaring omissions from the bill?
Well, I think it's important to point out that the task force report and the bill are really two different things. The task force report dealt specifically with the teacher and leadership compensation and roles. And the bill goes on to talk about things relative to evaluation. It talks about Iowa Learning Online. So there's some crossover where the bill and the task force report are similar, and then there are some differences. There are many things in the bill that we do agree with, and there are some things that we still have questions about and need to seek clarity on.
What are some of those questions?
One of the things would be in looking at the teacher leadership roles. The task force and the members of the task force were pretty specific about a process to allow teachers to have some significant input in who's selected as a teacher leader. What came out in the bill is very different than that process. And so just making sure that the administrators and the teachers in the building are comfortable with who's going to assume those roles is critically important in the success of the program. So that's one example.
And what are the things that you think are encouraging? What are some good steps to move forward with education reform?
Well, I think that we have so many teachers across the state and the teachers in the room here today, I think, could attest to this. We have a lot of teachers already doing teacher leadership roles in their schools, and teachers are leaders in their community. This idea that we give these individuals time to do these leadership roles and some acknowledgement through compensation that this is important work to do, I think is a really good conversation, and I'm glad we're having it.
Do you feel like it pulls those veteran teachers out of the classroom too much?
That is another piece that the teachers on the task force were really adamant about, and that is that when the teacher leader comes out of the classroom, somebody has to be in that classroom that's equally qualified to lead those students in their learning. And we had an online conversation with our members about this topic for a month in October, and that is exactly what teachers told us, that, you know, the only way I would be comfortable taking on one of these leadership roles and having a percentage of my time out of the classroom is knowing that my students were going to be very well taken care of while I was gone.
You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Are you a teacher, or do you know a teacher? How do you feel about the governor's education reform plan? Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or tweet to us at IPR Talk or Clayton Masters. You can also reach out to us on Facebook. Turning to the legislators around the table here, as I'm out in the field reporting a lot on education, a lot of principals, a lot of administrators talk about, well, you know, every legislator thinks they know something about education because they were in school once, and this is great to have two teachers sitting around the table right now. And we'll start with you, Senator Bowman. What are some of the things that you are encouraged by from this bill, and what's been left out?
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we recognize education should have the goal of continuous improvement every year. As a classroom teacher, I've never been content with my delivery or my curriculum. I'm always trying to reanalyze where I can improve in regard to how I instruct my classroom. And it's no different as a state senator. I'm always looking at the statewide process and saying, okay, how can we improve and deliver an outstanding system of education in the state of Iowa? I personally believe we have great education. We're first in the nation in graduation rate, the first time they've collectively had the same statistic gathered. And so that's a good point to hear. ACT scores, we're second in the nation. So we're doing good things. Can we improve? Absolutely. So that's what I'm looking at. And as I read the governor's bill, you know, I'm looking at what parts I think as an educator will work and what ones maybe need to be tweaked or eliminated.
And what would some of those need to be tweaked or eliminated?
Well, let's just start with the one that you've been spending some time talking about with the teacher leadership compensation division. You know, one of the criticisms that was brought up, not this year, but many when it was first released without much detail to it, was we're going to take the outstanding teacher and have them out of the classroom for 50% of the time. So one of my concerns, A, the students aren't getting that outstanding delivery of instruction half the day from our best teachers in the state of Iowa. B, I'm hearing from superintendents saying it's easier said than done in regard to replacing outstanding teachers, and especially in certain fields. You know, when you're talking about your chemistry teacher, or maybe your advanced Spanish teacher, or other dual credit enrollment classes that they have a real knack for a particular subject area, it's hard just to bring a substitute teacher in and say, you know, deliver the same fine, outstanding quality that was being delivered before. And so that concerns me. And I presented a bill last year that kind of addressed that issue, and, you know, it didn't get enough traction on the other side of the aisle.
Representative Stanerson, what do you have to say about the governor's bill? What do you like about it? What would you like to see changed? What are your thoughts after spending some time with it?
Well, the teacher leadership compensation portion of it, I think, gives teachers a alternative. Myself, I went to school, got my education administrative degree, because the logical procession would be I teach, and then if I want to move up, I go into administration to take on a more leadership role, become a principal or superintendent. This gives teachers the opportunity to move into that leadership role without fully leaving the classroom. I mean, I love teaching. I want to keep teaching as much as possible. Do I want to take on extra leadership roles and be rewarded for that? Well, that'd be nice. And so this gives me and other teachers an opportunity, another avenue. So I do like that. Are there things that need to be tweak, like Senator Bowman said, in there? For sure, and that's what the process we're going through now. We're taking the governor's bill. We're in subcommittee. We'll be hashing that out. We're hitting that tomorrow in subcommittee. That particular portion, devoting the whole time to just that portion of it. I think for small schools, it is a concern on how you will get covers, how exactly that will work. And again, no one wants to take the best and brightest teachers out of the classroom and not have someone in there of equal ability. I want my kids and with the best teachers in the school. So all that has to be tweaked. So those are my thoughts on that first part.
Senator Bowman, what would your bill have done to keep teachers in the classroom?
Well, what it would have done, I called it COIL, Creating Outstanding Instructional Leaders. What it would have done, instead of giving them 50% of their class time away to provide the leadership, it would have them teach the whole day, giving up their prep period, and be compensated as like a coach might be with a supplementary contract, and then they use their prep at night from 4 to 5:30 or 4 to 6 like coaches do, and then they would be available not only to teach their regular classes but go in and help, you know, in regard to similar concepts in regard to the leadership roles that were created in this bill.
Do you think there's room for introducing something like that again this year?
Well, you know, I'm not going to close my mind to anything. I certainly want to work across the aisle with my colleagues and the governor and listen and hear maybe what their criticism of my ideas are. I didn't get any criticism last year. I just got a blank no comment. So I'm looking forward to those conversations.
I guess, Mary Jane Cobb and Denny Wolf, what are you hearing from teachers? I mean, what is the main concern that you're hearing from teachers in your district or the teachers that you work with on a regular basis? Mary Jane, or you want to take that?
I mentioned earlier the concern about what happens to the students when a career teacher or lead teachers out of or a lead or mentor teachers out of the classroom. I hear that, and then I hear questions from teachers who really want to be classroom teachers. They are the people that want to spend their time with students and don't want to do sort of the adult learning portion of a teacher leadership role. And the question I get is, what does this plan do to help me improve my practice? And so we really have to look at this carefully and make sure that 75% of our teachers basically are going to be career teachers under this plan. Are they getting the kind of quality professional development they need? Are they getting the kind of peer interaction they need to enhance their practice? The bill doesn't address that, and I don't think as a task force we really address that as much as we would have liked to have.
Denny?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of hopes that are embedded in this and a nod along the way to local control, that the schools, the local schools understand what they need, and I feel a lot of flexibility in this. I'd echo my colleague when she talked about this may not be for everyone, this leadership, these particular leadership roles. However, I do think there are several layers within this. I have some teachers who really are good at teaching other adults, and sometimes they move on to AEAs, sometimes they move on to colleges. They, in the past, or administration, curriculum directors, they've had to move on to other things besides the classroom. I hold out hope that we're going to be able to keep more of those people in the classroom. A second level is mentoring, which we've had in Iowa for quite some time already. I think this strengthens and formalizes some of the processes of mentoring. I think that's good. And then there's some demonstration teachers, opportunities for people to open their classroom doors, receive some compensation, perhaps some extended days, and invite other teachers into their classrooms to learn. I think that's extremely powerful. My teachers say that they would love, they don't have to go to Massachusetts or South Carolina or anyplace else to learn more about good teaching. They can walk across the hallway. Unfortunately, right now, we just don't have that kind of time when they're free to be, when the kids are in session, to be able to walk across the hallways and find out what's going on next door.
Representative Stanton.
One of the criticisms of teaching as a profession is that they say we're on these islands. You know, we within our classroom, and we don't share our great wealth of knowledge and ability to fascinate and capacitate a classroom. So one thing that we need to do is the time element, because when, you know, teachers ask for one thing that they need. It's time, mm-hmm. time to collaborate with others. And so I think one thing that we can do is we have two pieces that we added last year we still haven't really addressed in our schools. One is this 36 hours of collaboration required. Another is peer review, which will go into another topic within this policy bill. But we certainly have a lot to deal with that we implemented last year that we're not fully implemented.
Representative Sanderson, were you wanting to jump in?
Well, it kind of goes along with what Mary Jane Cobb was saying earlier. I mean, we have the teachers already in the building that are that do a lot of this. Hopefully, this bill will recognize that, will give compensation and maybe give the time. I mean, there are extra contract days that apply to each level as you go up, and maybe those days would be used to do what we want them to, the mentoring, the lead, so...
We have an email from Barbara in Pleasantville. She writes, although I have been teaching for 20 years and believe that I'm a good teacher, I doubt that I will ever be able to become a master or mentor teacher and therefore earn a larger salary. Our school has 3 grades, K through 12 math teachers, and among us we have 3 prep periods and 2 study halls. In order for me, she writes, to be teaching fewer classroom hours, someone else will have to be hired. She says it would be difficult to find a math teacher, especially if it is only teaching half-time. Not only that, she writes, the master-mentor teacher is not a permanent position. Personnel can change yearly, and she wonders, how could we be able to convince a highly qualified person to teach even full-time for a transient position? I guess, Mary Jane, how would you answer that?
I think that's probably one of the biggest concerns that people see in the bill. And I think that it may vary depending on where you are in the state. I think our urban districts may have a larger pool to draw from as far as applicants and people available to fill those roles, and that we are looking at a situation in rural communities where that's going to be really tough to do. And so figuring out if there are ways that districts could collaborate in the rural communities, or if there's ways that we could use emeritus teachers, retired teachers who are still very much up to speed on what's going on in the classroom. I think this, we have landed on the most critical issue in this conversation, and that is making sure that the level of engagement and instruction in the classroom stays very, very high.
Superintendent Wolf, how would you respond to that?
I'd say any bill or any change has a lot of unintended consequences to it. But I do think it's done, this bill, and in the comprehensive way in which it's been developed, has the opportunity, it incentivizes more students from the universities to go into teaching. I see the opportunities for not only a $35,000 beginning salary, which is above the average in some Iowa schools right now, perhaps that might be the greatest gift to some of our small schools to get those salaries up there so that they can be more competitive with other schools. The second part of it is there's some forgiveness of the, you know, conversations about forgiveness for that final year. I think that will draw, in this competitive situation we're in right now, with the price of college being such a on the front burner as part of the conversation, that will be an incentive for the top 25% to consider moving into teaching. And I don't know that they have always made that a high priority in the past. I do think it's extremely significant that the top 25% of any graduating college class take a look at us, because there's a one-to-one relationship between content knowledge of these people coming out of college and the work that they do in our schools. And too often, the content experts have moved to someplace else. We can teach pedagogy in our K-12 districts, but we can't teach algebra and chemistry. Those things have got to come to us with prepared students from college.
And we're going to go...
Talk on that? You know, I'm going to respectfully disagree. Students that are already into student teaching, you know, whether it's year 1, 2, 3, or 4 in college, 4 years out, are they going to really make a decision to go into education because the income goes from 26 to 35. I think you're called to education. It's not going to be based on a salary going up slightly. And the other component of that is if they go in at $35,000, which is great, I'm not knocking that component, but they might be stuck at $35,000 for the next 4 or 5 years based on a small school district's salary schedule. And I know this plan addresses it slightly, but a beginning year teacher wouldn't see any change in that probably for 4 or 5 years under current contracts.
And I want to jump out to somebody who's called. Preston joins us on the line. Preston, thanks for holding on. What's your question?
Absolutely. It's more of a comment, really, and I really have to say that Senator Bowman's plan, I think, is something that would work really well for rural schools. Senator Bowman was actually my high school psychology, sociology, government teacher. He was my wrestling coach, and he was my model UN advisor. And, I mean, teachers like him, it definitely kept me and, you know, some of my friends interested in wanting to pursue higher education, especially in a rural district like we were in. Keeping teachers like Mr. Bowman and other dedicated teachers like him in the classroom, but also allowing them to do these other activities like he did when I was in school, in addition to taking on mentor roles, you know, is super important. But kind of like we've heard a couple of times, I think it's very important to keep teachers in the classroom.
And certainly addressing the fan mail, but it is, I mean, it's a challenge in rural districts, and is this too much of a one-size-fits-all, or, I mean, is there a way to...
Well, that's what I'm hearing, Clay. My superintendent talked to me this morning about this exact issue. What are we going to do? You know, it might come down to how hard will it be to replace this particular teacher might be one of the factors in whether we want them in this position or not. And that would be a terrible discrimination toward that teacher. But on the flip side of it, we certainly don't want that teacher out for half the day and not being able to replace that instructor with a quality person. So, again, I appreciate the comments from Preston.
All right. Thanks, Preston, for calling. I want to also, Representative Stanerson, how would you respond to that?
Can I go back to what Danny was talking
about? Yeah.
And like Senator Bowman said, you don't go into teaching for the money. You go in there, it's a calling. I think that it is important to recognize teachers as professionals and be compensated fairly. And $35,000 for someone that could go into another field, I mean, that might be a little more appealing. A little more appeal to go into the teaching, and then the college forgiveness, the $4,000 while you teach. I mean, that is appealing, and I think that it will have an impact on getting the best and brightest to choose education.
And what about just addressing what's going on in these kids or in these teachers' classrooms? We're talking so much about compensation, but what about just problems that teachers are experiencing in the classroom? Mary Jane, you're shaking your head.
I am, because we had our executive board meeting this week, and we had educators from across the state in, and I asked the question, if you could do one thing to improve education in the state, what would that be? And had them write their notes for me for a meeting later today. And I was overwhelmed by the number of answers that weren't about teachers and they weren't about schools. It was, we need to deal with poverty. We need to make sure that the students have the kinds of opportunities at home to learn, to do things, to read, to count. They need the kinds of supports and emotional supports. We need good health care, mental health care. We need to address the needs of our transient population, students who are in one school 1 week and another school another week. Getting them grounded in their learning is incredibly difficult. Meeting the needs of our English language learners. So that's what teachers tell me.
We're talking about the governor's education reform bill here on Iowa Public Radio. It's River to River. We'll be right back after the news. From the Law Library in the Iowa State House, this is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. We're talking education reform today with some of Iowa's lawmakers and educators. Joining us are Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa on the Senate. He teaches high school government and psychology. Representative Quentin Stanerson, a Republican from Centerpoint. He's also a middle school and high school teacher. And we also have Executive Director of the Iowa State Education Association, Mary Jane Cobb. And also crowded around the table here is Denny Wolf, the superintendent at Norwalk Community Schools. And we want to reach out to you. Are you a teacher, a parent? What aren't legislators talking about? Call us at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk or reach out to us on Facebook. Now, before the 12:30 break there, Mary Jane was saying that compensation is not the number one issue for teachers. And I want to pose this question to legislators. I mean, as far as dealing with problems in the classroom, would you agree with that? We'll start with you, Representative Sanderson.
No, I don't think that that compensation is probably the number one issue that teachers are facing. I think that one of the things, and I'm sure that Senator Bowman would agree with me as a teacher, that we want to make sure that whatever comes down from the State House is relevant, is consistent, is a good plan that's put in place that's gonna stand the test of time, I guess. It seems that this is my first year up here in the legislature, but it seems like every so many years something new is coming down the pike, and it frustrates teachers down there. And so they want to make sure that any reform that's coming about has been well thought out, and that this is actually going to help in student achievement. And so we need to sell this to teachers that it is a good plan, and we need to work across party lines to ensure them that we've answered all those questions and that we're putting a good plan in place that's not just going to come in one year and out the other. So,
well, I would certainly say compensation is not the number one concern. The teachers I work with on a daily basis, they're worried about their professional satisfaction, how they can make a difference in the world, and they want to improve and be better at their craft, and so that's what they're looking at. They certainly don't ever close their eyes to ideas. They just have some probably more expertise than some of the people that are passing down this legislation in regard to what will work. A perfect example is the frustration teachers and administrators are sharing with me about peer review. You know, we put it in, you know, to deal with No Child Left Behind issues, waivers, and we haven't gotten any real direction from the Department of Education on that. And, you know, training, if you're going to ask teachers to invest that time into a new process to further their cause. They're for that, but let's get them the training, give them the time to do this. And so far, I haven't heard of any positives in regard to peer review. So I'm not saying it can't be, but we're certainly not headed down that road or that path right now.
And we have a unique group of people sitting around the table to have a Republican and a Democrat from both sides of the House and the Senate. Both teachers, what can you do as lawmakers to work together to help with some of the problems that you see in your classrooms? I will start with you, Representative.
I guess to help in my classroom, kind of like Senator Bowman said, is just to make sure that we're getting the time to work on in professional development to find the best ways to reach every student. I guess that would be one of the things that I would like to see.
Senator Bowman?
Well, in my class, I've really evolved a little bit from your basic multiple choice type tests where, you know, you're asking kids to recall information that they can get off of their little iPhone in 20 seconds. So what I'm emphasizing is critical thinking. And one of the directions I think our state needs to a policy that we need to address is our writing skills. I'm asking my students to do a lot of writing. My superintendent and principal, Vervec, are asking me and the rest of the teachers in our school to emphasize writing skills because we know it involves higher level critical thinking skills. And so instead of asking them what is a line item veto, the question becomes, should the governor or a president have the power to line item veto? And that takes a lot more thinking. They still have to research. They have to understand the issue a lot deeper and be able to articulate that on paper or in other formats. You know, we have debates and different ways of analyzing, assessing their knowledge and that critical thinking component. So that's what I'm interested in regard to how does my classroom experience push forward ideas in regard to education or continuous improvement in education.
As we're sitting here talking about reform, you know, we've got to pay for it some way. Mary Jane Cobb, Executive Director of Iowa State Education Association, how confident are you that salary increases would be funded or how they would be funded?
Well, I think that the conversation we've been having the last few weeks about whether or not we have the conversation relative to allowable growth, the mechanism that schools get, basically their cost of living adjustments, before we have an education reform discussion makes people very nervous. The idea that we may do one and not the other, and that we're somehow going to underfund this program or another program in schools makes people very nervous. So the truth of the matter is education is an expensive proposition. It is a labor or people-intensive proposition. If we're going to do something like this, we have to make sure that the funding is sustainable and that it's not going to become sort of the flavor of the day. Teachers are accustomed to the legislature having good ideas to be enacted, and then there are the good ideas that come at the district level, and then there's some good ideas that come from the building level. And sometimes teachers have too many good ideas from too many places that they need to try to implement in their classroom. So fewer, more targeted good ideas that are sustainably funded is exactly what we need.
Denny Wolf, superintendent of Norwalk Community Schools, you were on the compensation task force. Was that talked about at all when you were throwing ideas around as where the money actually comes from?
Yeah, I think that was talked about, but ours was a lot more along the line of costing.
Okay.
You know, not determining where money might come from. It wasn't given to us originally that you have this many dollars. We had a sense of how many dollars might be available, but they weren't. It wasn't told to be within this. In fact, I think some of the recommendations came out that once we understood how comprehensive they really wanted to be with this, it was going to require more money than we thought originally. But I am going to just say for my colleagues out there that are teaching that I do think it's an altruistic profession. And I do think that we're here because we want to be here and because we love kids. But by the same token, we have our own kids to send to college. And just like medicine and law, you have to make a living wage to keep people in this profession. So if we really respect the work that our teachers do, we need to pay them a commensurate salary to what they might earn in the private sector.
Are you a teacher, a parent? You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's River to River. What aren't we talking about? What do you want to see legislators and educators talk about? Call us at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk or Clayton Masters, or reach out on Facebook. We're going to go now to Mel from West Des Moines. Mel, what's your question?
Well, it's just more of a comment. I agree with the person. Money is fine. I'm getting a little tired of saying it's a calling so that they can pay us less. But the two points that I wanted to make is, one, the problem that we have with non-motivation occurs because some kids are hungry, they're coming from bad areas, etc. Second thing is, I was a sophomore teacher of English for 7 years, and when you assign a paper, you get 150 of them. And it takes time for those things, and it takes more time than a 45-minute planning period. So if we really want to have an impact upon students, we need to try to find a way in which we can almost get a 1-to-1 or a 1-to-5 or a 1-to-10. We have to get the numbers of people down so that a teacher can actually impact what they're doing. If some kid comes in at a no reading level and he leaves the fourth grade area reading at the second grade level, why don't we praise that instead of going, oh no, he's not reading at the fourth grade level? I mean, you only have a year, and you only get him for 45 minutes, yet you improved him 2 years over time. There's got to be something done with the amount of work that we do.
All right, Mel, thanks for calling. So, I mean, maybe we have a situation here where it's don't put the apples in bumping up salaries. Maybe spend it on more one-on-one or 1-to-5, as the caller was saying. What do you say to that comment? You're talking to teachers on a regular basis, Mary Jane.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is I think that I agree with Denny's comments about teachers being very altruistic and not going into teaching for the money. But the reality is teaching is a profession, and teachers need to be compensated for being professionals. And so we should deal with that issue and elevate the beginning teacher salary and elevate the average salary of teachers in Iowa, and then get that off the table so that we could talk about the other important pieces. And the issue of time is absolutely critical. Time for teachers to engage with each other in the kinds of peer review and collaboration that Representative Bowman talked about, but the time to take to reflect on your practice, to grade all of those really good essays, and to do the kind of reflective assessment that's harder to do than a bubble in test. That all takes time, and we are not providing in our days the time for the professionals in the building to do that.
We're getting a lot of callers. I want to move to Robert in Fairfield. Robert, what's your question?
Hi, yes. I have a daughter who's a sophomore in high school. She's a straight-A student, has been since she entered school. And since she's entered high school, she has less homework than she had in middle school. I ask the teachers, why is this happening? And they say, well, we give them time to do their homework in class. And my daughter has no study hall, so 15 minutes out of a classroom to do homework for me is doesn't make any sense. My daughter is bored. I ask the teachers, why isn't she getting more challenged? And all I get from my teachers is a blank stare. My child is being left behind, way behind, and she's interested in getting into the STEM fields, engineering, and I don't feel she's being properly prepared for this. How are you going to address the children who are performing as good students or great students and not being left behind?
Thanks, Robert. We have another caller I want to get to, and then we'll kind of they complement each other well. So we'll go to Steve now in Cedar Rapids. Steve, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of my wife, who's an elementary school teacher, and most of the teachers aren't able to even listen to this right now. So my wife has been teaching elementary school for 20 years, more than 20 years, and she loves being a teacher. It's kind of the same thing. She doesn't do it for the money. She does it because she loves being a teacher and reaching out to these students. But more and more of her students over the last few years have it's the poverty thing that's coming from bad homes or broken homes, homes where the kids are not challenged enough. So she has to put aside the good students in her classroom to deal with the ones that have the problems, the behavior disorders, the ones that have the individual education plans. And it's quite a distraction. She comes home exhausted all the time. She's more of a social worker these days. So I'd like to see more support for teachers to be able to teach and not actually have to deal with the social problems that their students bring to the school.
So we have one caller who's saying that his daughter's not getting enough time, and we have another caller who's saying that his wife doesn't have enough time to spend one-on-one. I mean, I guess we'll start with you, Representative Stanerson. You were nodding your head at one point.
Well, I guess it goes back to what Robert was saying, and hopefully with this education reform proposal and maybe some more stuff coming down the line, we can push your daughter, the Iowa Learning Online, there's a push for that. Been talking to community colleges about their regional centers and continuing building our relationship with the community colleges and the schools to offer some more upper level courses for those students so that they're not held back and that they can continue to move forward. So on that, I guess, Robert, there's stuff being talked about. And hopefully that we can help out and give your daughter some more avenues.
Senator Bowman, how would you respond to Robert and Steve?
And Mel. Mel had a little statement in there. And to start with, you know, Mel's talking about growth versus proficiency, and that's a key component of outstanding teacher. Let's take Robert's daughter. If she improves from the 95th percentile to the 97th percentile, we say great job. Under the growth model, under the proficiency model, if she's at 95 and she drops to 95, we're still saying great job. So we need to look at growth, not proficiency. That's first. Then in regard to challenging students at Maquoketa High School, we're teamed up with a satellite Clinton Community College. We offer a wide variety of dual enrollment classes. We have AP classes that many schools offer, and we certainly want to challenge every student. So to me, I've had students just recently get 2 years of college classes, get their associate's degree, and we're challenging them at a level never before. About 8 years ago, they were talking about, do we really need the senior year? Should we just drop off grade 12? Well, now the students are overloading and taking more classes than ever. My son, who's a sophomore, is taking a college-level class, legal justice class online, you know, during one of his off block periods that he couldn't fit another course in that was challenging. So my students that are taking the college level government class aren't asking for less or asking for more homework. I'll guarantee you that.
So combining some of the themes from the questions we're getting from callers, is testing forcing teachers to focus more attention on the kids who need more help to determine the kids who don't? Mary Jane, how would you respond to that?
I would say that we have had an overemphasis on standardized tests and the proficiency scores that Senator Bowman talked about since the beginning of No Child Left Behind, and the simple system of saying this school's doing a really good job based on this number and this school's not. I think that the kinds of things we're talking about with one student's needs and teachers' times gets us to the issue of differentiated instruction and what teachers are really doing in the classroom and trying to make sure every student is getting what he or she needs. That goes back to the conversation about resources. Are the class sizes larger? Are they too large for the teacher to be able to do that adequately? And is there some way that these teacher leadership roles could make that happen? There is another conversation taking place about education in our state around competency-based education and whether or not it makes sense for students to move through our education system based on what they learn and what they know how to do and can understand than grade level. It is a very complicated conversation, but it's one we need to continue to have because I think it addresses all of these kinds of circumstances in a way that is really meaningful for students.
And we have a caller on the line that has a specific question for you, Denny Wolf, superintendent with Norwalk Community Schools. We're going to go to Aaron in Iowa City. Aaron, what's your question?
Well, whenever I hear talk of overhauling education, I always hear talk of teacher assessment, you know, teacher qualification, that sort of thing. I never hear talk about administrator assessment, administrator qualification. And as a parent, in my experience, an administrator can be a huge asset to a school, and they can also railroad a school into the ground. And I've witnessed both. So I'm wondering why everything's on the teacher's back rather than talking about administrators as well. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fantastic point. And I think one of the topics of conversation that are going on right now is what administrators need to do to become more competent in helping teachers move through this leadership cycle. I think that right now, not all administrators got into our profession because they were instructional leaders. And I think some of them have a good financial sense and can understand how budgets run. A lot of different reasons. They're good at crowd management. They're good at they're popular within their school districts. You know, I think we could go to a lot of places because not always have these been extremely attractive jobs to get into. But I think one of the biggest challenges of this new legislation is going to be getting administrators to change the way they look at teachers and the way they look at education. I think that a lot of times we are, and I can speak for myself, we're used to directing things. We're not always used to sitting down with a group of people and being as open, perhaps, as we should be. There's a sense of a loss of power. There are a lot of people looking at us and say the success of the school or the lack of success is the responsibility of one person, that's a superintendent. I think that we need to change that frame of reference to much more shared leadership. And for some of us, including myself, that's going to require some new learning about how to work with my teachers, how to be open with my teachers, and how to turn some of that decision-making over to my staff.
Senator Bowman, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why we are even looking at this new policy is principals do need help with providing instructional support. There's all sorts of proof of that, and most administrators would agree with that. And who's best to provide the top-notch instructional support? Your best teachers. One of the ideas that I would entertain is having more administrators go back and teach at least one class. That way, when they provide instructional support, it has some relevancy to it. I know President Mason at the University of Iowa teaches a leadership class, and obviously her schedule's pretty busy too, but she still finds time to have those classroom skills honed, and when they go to deliver their message at professional development, you're speaking from, this is what and how I use this particular technique in my class versus this is what you need to do. It's going to make you a great teacher.
Representative Stanerson, did you have something you wanted to add to that? No? Okay. I'm also getting some questions about whether we need to extend the school year. We're getting so many questions, and I can only get to so many. What do you have to say to that, Denny?
I would just say that the one thing that I've heard all the way through this conversation is time. And I do think it's time for teachers. You know, we've discussed how many papers we have to correct at night and so on. But also it's time for students. And I do think that one of the common themes that's going to run out as a potential solution is we've got some short-term problems about poverty and some things like that, that things like extended days for certain segments of the population I think are just necessary. However, I also think that there's some long-term strength in this because the eventual key to bringing more wealth into our state is to have a better educated population. I am happy that Google and others are taking a look at the state. They're starting to believe that that kind of capacity exists in our state. I think that's the long-range answer.
And I want to thank all of my guests today here from the Iowa State House for joining me today. River to River is produced by Iowa Public Radio News by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance for those teachers that couldn't listen online, we got from John Pimble. Podcasting is available of River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thank you.